Welcome to Lethal Mullet, episode number 100, plus 100, plus 20, plus 8, that's right, 228, folks, live here and, of course, the Facebook page. And, of course, if you're listening to this, you're listening to it on the FPN channel. That is, of course, Fandom Podcast Network. Welcome, I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet here, where we celebrate action pictures of the past from the all the way back in the 80s, the 90s, 2000s as well. And tonight's one looks at one that's, you know, really a turning point, I think, for two actors. And that is, of course, Matthew McConaughey and Christian Bale, who were at the time, you know, really, in the nutshell, character actors. You know, they really were two that always made characters that were interesting. We also have some great background characters, actors in this too. Right. Actors that went on to some leads in their own, and one of those, of course, being Gerard Butler. That's right. So you've got Batman, Duke Pitt, and Leonidas all in the one film. I mean, you can't do much better, can you, folks? All films that I've enjoyed, and no doubt you've all enjoyed those series. And, of course, tonight's one, Reign of Fire, from a director that had worked on a lot of the X-Files series, which, of course, is beloved as well. It's great, you know, you're pitting a post-apocalyptic future with dragons. And in some ways, medieval even has castles and even some Easter eggs of Star Wars, all in one movie, folks. 228, let's get into it. Hey, folks, how you doing? This here is Adam, and of course, I'm the Lethal Mullet. And this is the movie of choice, Reign of Fire. That's right, try and get no shine on that. Lights here because it is getting a little bit dark here in the gloominess of the Gold Coast today because it's quite cold, hence why I'm wearing hoodies and stuff like that. But you can't see my hat because it's camouflaged. But Reign of Fire, what a movie. And if you ever got a chance to see this at the cinemas, it is quite a movie. You know, it's big, it's expansive, it's got some big personalities in it. We've even got a Bond girl in this as well. It's great. You've even got Dr. Bashir from, of course, the one, the only DS9. You know, we'll get into, of course, a lot of the cast very soon and my thoughts on the movie. And, you know, this is the best place to do it because we love these sorts of films, which, you know, you don't get these days in the cinemas as such. You might get B-grade versions of them, but these days, the big movies are comic book movies. And if you're into that, you know, that's great. But that's the sort of thing you're going to be seeing on screen these days. Those are, you know, the big franchise pictures, you know. And I think that's the big thing that's changed with cinema. You know, if it's not Star Wars, Marvel, DC, or Star Wars or Marvel and DC, then you got Buckley's chance of, you know, seeing it out there, I guess. But, you know, movies like this, you know, they get a chance. It's great to see because it is futuristic, it's post-apocalyptic, it's everything that you want in a movie. In some ways, kind of like a Mad Max movie with dragons. So we'll be talking about that very, very soon. But of course, on the Lethal Mullet, we need to let you know where you can find this show and many more like it. And of course, you need to head to the Fandom Podcast Network, celebrating the state of condition or being a fan of someone or something. fpnet.podbean.com. And it's a great channel, folks. You know, we've got a myriad of different shows, you know, and different networks that have joined us all in the one spot. And it's a great platform to check out all the other great shows that are on there. You know, everything from Doctor Who to American football. You've got Culture Clash looking at all the latest pop culture news. And you know, you've got right down to looking at Star Trek. There's a myriad of Star Trek shows on there. If you're into Star Trek, this, you know, is something that really looks at it quite well, this channel. Everything from the new stuff to, of course, older stuff, like Making Trek a Star Trek Fan podcast with myself and, of course, Mark Newbold, which, you know, is a passion of ours to look at both of the Star franchises. But Star Trek, you know, always gets the fat end of the stick sometimes in terms of its popularity and stuff like that. But I think it's certainly having a comeback in recent years in streaming and stuff like that. And, of course, with Picard, did a fantastic job of really engaging the fans of the new and the old. So with that, let's introduce, of course, the founders of FPN, the one, the only, Kevin the Raider Nerd! Reitzel, of course, FPN co-founder and host of the Bloody Kings show. Now, of course, Kevin hosts this along with my dear pal, Lee Fillingsness, Norwegian Smooth. That's right. Those two do a fantastic job of looking at the Highlander franchise. As you can see, the Blood of Kings logo there on, of course, Kevin's T-shirt there. And it's a great show. It's been pretty much the longest running show on the network. But looked at not only the movies of Highlander, but of course the great Adrian Paul TV show that ran for 6 seasons and of course had a spin-off series, of course Highlander, and many, many fans of Highlander also watching this show right here and now and listening too, because we love it as well, and certainly going to be talking very, very soon on this podcast with Andy Sloan, who is, of course, huge into, of course, the fandom also of Highlander, and really does a great job of looking at some of the great locations used on the TV show. He also looked at, you know, different places you can see in, obviously, the locations that did it, but also, you know, the different houses and buildings used, all that sort of stuff. Fantastic job. But he's going to be joining me here for a look at the third season, which is really when it took off, just like, of course, Star Trek The Next Generation and others. You know, they get 2 seasons in just to really, you know, I guess, find the foot of where things are and find their feet as far as performance. But I think Adrian Paul was on fire, and the first episode, The Samurai of season 3, really gets the ball rolling. And obviously, this is where McLeod gets his katana, his samurai sword, which is going to be great. So also, of course, we've got co-founder along with him, of course, is Kyle Wagner, host of Culture Clash. Kyle, one of my dear pals, of course, from the other side of the States, as Kevin is based in, of course, Santa Barbara in California. So California, obviously, one side of the coast. We've got Kyle on the other. And Kyle, of course, does a fantastic job of looking after not only in the engineering side of things when it comes to these great shows and giving you this great platform that you see it on, but also he's a fantastic host. As you know, we had him on a recent episode where we looked at, of course, Sahara. Now, if you've seen 227, which just went out live a couple of days ago, we looked at just, you know, what made this movie, you know, not only a great adaptation, you know, and again, it's not exactly the book of Clive Cussler's Sahara, but it really had that Raiders of the Lost Ark feel in a sort of more modern environment. And I've really enjoyed, you know, not only getting to go through the movie again, but having a look at the book as well. And, you know, Clive Cussler's books have always, since I was a teenager, been something that I've been into and really enjoyed the adventure. But it was great to catch up with Kyle, and because Kyle loves that too. Now, of course, Lethal Mullet you can find here on this channel, of course, if you're listening into it. It's on the fpn.pombean.com. You can find it on most podcatchers, just about everywhere, obviously. And you can catch us on the biggest of the socials, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, at The Lethal Mullet. And obviously, we look at all sorts of different stuff on there, from B-grade action cinema to what the action stars are up to today. We also look at some of the different, you know, I'll put interesting posts that I find, or some info that, you know, maybe even I didn't know about action films on there too. And you particularly look at different stuff we share that we've seen, and definitely try and keep you up to date with what's great about, you know, action movies in central. You know, you look at some of the up-and-coming stars, like, of course, Scott Adkins, one of my big faves. Even just looked at some stuff that Gary Daniels was doing as well. Again, another favorite of mine who, you know, I think needs to be given a bit more credit for just how much he did for, obviously, the UK action scene as well. And, of course, we'll be looking at very soon Fist of the North Star, which he did, and of course, Chris Penn's in that, and a number of other fantastic talent as well, and an Australian as well as the villain. So we'll be looking at that, and I think that, again, that's an anime adaptation that, you know, probably should have been given a little bit more credit. It's fantastic. So in that more, but of course, tonight we're going to be talking about a great film, of course, that is, of course, Reign of Fire. And right now I've got the Blu-ray that you can see here, the Australian version of the Blu-ray. the PAL version, or PAL, as we call it out here. Obviously, in the United States, for example, you have NTSC, but mostly in the UK states, we've got this PAL version. And, you know, again, a great film, but nice to see in a HD format. For years, it was only available out here on DVD. So great to have that and be able to watch it on the big screen here. And, of course, we've got a projector now here at the Cantina, which we were able to watch these great movies on. Now, this movie came out at a time where I think a lot of action cinema was getting a bit more gritty. And it definitely was a violent time for cinema. It was, and what I mean by that is violent realism was coming into some of the bigger action movies. You know, you had Bourne Identity, which was really doing the rounds at the time. A lot of people really getting into that sort of realistic take on martial arts and close quarter combat, CQB, all that sort of stuff. And I think part of that extended then to bigger action pictures, you know, and making things even grittier. And it kind of, in some ways, getting back to that 1970s and even late 60s aesthetic of less, you know, I think eye candy, more about getting down to the nuts and bolts of the story and really just acting that part out too. So we've got quite a big cast in this movie, and, you know, just literally going off my head of this one because I love it so much. Christian Bale is the lead of this one. Christian Bale coming out of a time where we had his role in Shaft, where he played the villain. He also was in around about the same time in, of course, American Psycho. And it's around about that time too that obviously Reign of Fire came across, and another one in about 2002, which we've covered before, one of my favorites. And to be honest, I think better than The Matrix. That is, of course, Equilibrium, the film by Kurt Wimmer. And that was a great one for Gun Carter. I mean, they literally labeled the gunplay martial arts in it Gun Carter. And in a very, you know, essential part of cinema now, thanks to John Woo and many other action directors and stuff like that, which have made their staple, doing a lot of those great, you know, gun battles with pistols and different things. We see it all the way back to, obviously, John Woo's work into his American films even, and obviously working with Face Off and, of course, my favorite, Hard Target. We get to see Van Damme, two pistols in a lot of it too, even though that was kind of done in some of his earlier ones, like Double Impact as well. But in this one's a little bit different than that too, but you can get to see the action pictures we're heading that way. With Reign of Fire, with Christian Bale, you know, he's hot off those sorts of movies, really getting into this, you know, this time where he's trying to get his feel of becoming a lead. And particularly if you look at this film, you know, this came at a time where, you know, he knew where he was. He was a child actor originally, and obviously worked on a Spielberg movie and worked his way up from there, and obviously done quite a bit experience-wise when it comes to being an actor and really honing his craft. Of course, next to him, we have, you know, somebody that needs very little in the way of, you know, really showing you just how good a talent he is. And particularly at this time of his career, we're, of course, talking about Matthew McConaughey, which we've covered in the last episode, some of his work. You know, he's a fantastic, very serious actor, and one that's, you know, turned into more modern years, particularly these days, and somebody that's really wanting to, you know, hone in on what is important in life and, you know, creating a better mind for yourself and for you, you know, for your future, all that sort of stuff. I think what he is, you know, his self-help stuff, if you like, is really shows a lot of his character. And you know, Matthew McConaughey is somebody that's, you know, I think quite cynical in the way that he looks at, but also filled with faith as well at the same time, which is something that goes into his performances in these films. He's a man of belief, and it definitely is with his character in this too, which we're going to talk about in a sec. So that's the kind of, you know, he'd done that sort of thing before. We've got roles like in U-571 as well that he'd done. And obviously he'd worked in that sort of lawyer format, which he'd come back to many years later. But what's interesting about it is that we know, you know, in 2002, this is a time where he is kind of finding his feet in terms of being the top of the action table. And especially when it comes to, you know, being a lead. And this one, he looks to be a villain at the start, especially as he comes into it. We'll talk about the story of it in a sec. But as Van Zandt, he's kind of a Colonel Kurtz in some ways. There's a little bit of Brando to, I guess, the style of character. Not so much in the performance. The intensity's there. You know, he's definitely somebody that's seen war, in this case, loss. And there's a lot of PTSD about the performances in this movie. But I think what's important is the intensity. And particularly when you're butting up two massive, very serious actors, you know, Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey, it's going to lend to some amazing performances. So with that, let's look at the film. So it's a 2002 post-apocalyptic film. You know, it's sci-fi, but it's also fantasy. And the director, of course, is Rob Bowman, who's no slouch when it comes to those sorts of films. And, of course, working on TV shows just like it. Now, we've got the two leads in this, and they're, you know, coming into a film that's written by Matt Greenberg, and Greg Chabot, and, of course, Kevin Peterka. Now, the film also has co-stars in it. We've got Isabella Skripko, and we've also got, of course, Leonidas from 300. That, of course, is a very younger, well, not that much younger, 5 years younger, Gerard Butler at the time. So when is the film set? Well, it's, the film is set in the time of course, COVID, 2020. you know, it was made in 2002, but that is where this post-apocalyptic Dragon Age, if you like, is. So it is 20 years after London had gone through a stage where they were doing a tunneling project, and there were workers down into the actual London Underground that had awakened a dragon from a slumber of many, many centuries. And from here, of course, we have the dragons awaken, and they literally scorch the earth. And as much as the human race puts up a fight, the dragons pretty much wipe out everybody. So from this, the dominant race on the planet is dragons. Dragons as a whole. And the dragons themselves have pretty much ruined the entire planet in terms of crops, in terms of trying to find food. Everything is at that bottom point. You know, it's a little bit like Waterworld or something like that, or even Mad Max. So with that, there's only a couple of surviving parties. One, we've got in, of course, Quinn Abercrombie, played by, of course, Christian Bale, who has his own castle in England. And of course, if with that, he's got everything set up to survive in this fortress, if you like, with young kids that he's brought together, families and stuff like that. And they work together to, of course, conserve and, of course, get what they need to survive. From this too, we've also got Denton Van Zandt, who has his own little mercenary brigade, if you like. And they are dragon slayers. And they come to basically to England, all the way from the United States, to find their way, if you like. And find, of course, some more cannon fodder to take on, of course, the dragons. And that's pretty much the crux of the story. Apart from that, there's lots of, of course, many, many attacks by the dragons in this too, so which we're going to get into now. So let's have a quick look at the major plot. So with this, Quinn, along with Creedy, of course, leads basically a group of survivors, and they're at Bamburgh Castle in Northumberland. And this is where they found that they can outstay, basically, all the dragons and just wait till they go back into hibernation, which they do apparently every so often. And from here, he obviously is the leader of this group, and he's teaching the children that they've got there too about the olden days, and also just, you know, about modern myths and stuff like that as well. From here, we get to see there's a little bit of unrest around the community itself. Some try and get out and basically just through sheer hunger want to take the crops that they've been preparing for the next so many years. And of course, with that too, they get a dragon come down and try and take them out. And of course, from here, it actually wipes out half their stuff that they have. From here, a heavily armed group of mercenaries, in this terms, Americans, turn up with tanks and different other armed vehicles, and also a helicopter. And they're all led by, of course, McConaughey's character, Denton Van Zandt, which is this gung-ho, shotgun-wielding and an axe-wielding Dragon Slayer. He's basically a recon marine, if you like. He's basically just trying to get to Quinn's people and use Quinn's people to be the new cannon fodder, or snares, if you like, of the dragons. So they go out and they actually go and do the snaring of the dragons from the helicopter, zoom down and use bolos to do that. From here, Van Zandt basically puts up a bit of a blind, if you like, to what's going on so that he can get into the camp and do what he needs to do. But with this, he comes up against, of course, Quinn. There's many fireworks between the two. Some really interesting scenes, too, because they really, you can tell they're right into their characters. The fact that McConaughey shaved his head and grew his beard out for the role, really, he looks like a trucker. a real trucky sort of look, as we call it out here in Australia, or even a bikey. That's a bike gang member or something like that. All right, this bikey sort of look that he does have looks really interesting and fierce, and obviously it's what is needed to convey obviously this mercenary might, if you like, of this team. So Van Zandt, introduces everyone. We also have Alex Jensen in this too, which is a character who flies the helicopters and gets the different hunters to take out the dragons as they do. So they said they've killed 200 dragons, and of course they found out something about the dragons themselves, that they're all female. And of course with that, there must be a male somewhere. And there is. There's a male in London. So part of the plot at the end is that they need to take a draft to get a group of new recruits and bolster up a new army to go to London and try and kill in the underground, the London Underground, where they found this dragon, take it out, and so they can't fertilize new eggs and, of course, more dragons. Basically, with that, they'll all die out. From there, we have this massive action scene where it is literally just Alex Jensen, of course, Denton Van Zandt and Quinn trying to take on dragons. And again, it's the post-apocalyptic look of London itself, which is really, really interesting. So it's huge. With that too, all the effects work and stuff like that is top notch. So let's have a little chat about the cast. Christian Bale is Quinn Abercrombie. Bale's intense. There's no getting around, what his, feel is of these sorts of films as usual. But I've got to say, when it comes to Christian Bale, he never half does a role. He's in it 140% or more, 200% if you like, and really becomes the characters that you see on screen. I mean, you're going to see his work as, in American Psycho or Batman, and any of those roles, The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, whatever it is. There's an intensity to what he does. I mean, even to 3:10 to Yuma, where he's playing a family man who is a war veteran. And he's only just trying to basically buy off the people that are trying to get to his land, and it's such a good performance, up against, Russell Crowe, who, usually does a fantastic performance himself, but I think kind of phoned in 3:10 to Yuma. It was a very, very easy role, the way he was doing it. Matthew McConaughey is Denton Van Zandt, again, as we've mentioned. He's right on the money. Very, very strong performance. And I think, McConaughey was really interesting in this one. I think he's the pick of the bunch when it comes to how that really came across. We've got Isabella Scorupco, obviously, of GoldenEye, and Vertical Limit. She was really good in as well, as Alex Jensen. And she gets some great scenes in this too. Now, Gerard Butler as the comic relief and, of course, budding action star in his own right. Obviously, he took off, and look at him now. He's done so many straight-to-cinema movies. I was going to say, even in, streaming times, you always see his stuff on the big screen as well. Gerard Butler, this was leading up to, of course, 07 when we got 300, and this is Sparta, all that stuff. Fantastic in this. And again, he's the comic relief. Between him and, of course, Christian Bale, they get a great scene where they reenact part of course, of Empire Strikes Back. the Black and the White Knight, or whatever they sort of drill it down to. But it is the myth of that this sort of storyline that they bring in, and they do a fantastic, incredible job of it. I think it's really well done, and it's kind of heartwarming to see that done right. So we also got Scott Mouter as Jared Wilkie. We've got David Kennedy as Eddie Stax. Alexander Siddig as RJ, or AJ. Now, obviously, he's a fantastic actor in his own right, and one who I do believe, you know, ever since Deep Space Nine and doing the watches of that back in the 1990s, always seen Alexander's work later on movies and various TV shows he'd worked on, but mainly the films, even Kingdom of Heaven. And he has a way of, you know, subtly stealing the screen with his amazing performances. You know, with other actors are well and truly out-acted, he is a real marvel to watch and just makes it look easy. I'm sure acting is one of the hardest things, to keep it subtle, but keep it believable and really just grab our attention when we're watching these scenes. We've got Ned Dennehy as Barlow, Rory Keenan as Devon, Terence Maynard as Gideon, Doug Cockle as Goosh. We've also got Elise Krieg, as Karen Abercrombie. Now, Elise Krieg, you might know better as, of course, another role that's out there, of course, the Borg Queen from First Contact. But, of course, those that have watched Children of Dune, the Frank Herbert's Children of Dune on the Sci-Fi Channel in 2003, which was literally just after this, she played, of course, Jessica. She was actually meant to be the first pick for Jessica in the original miniseries before Children of Dune. And she was too busy at the time, whatever it was. But then, of course, they got their chance to actually cast her in the next one. And Children of Dune actually is pretty damn good. And a lot of the actors from that have gone on to amazing work since. It's fantastic. So this was a original screenplay that was done in 1996 and had been doing the rounds. And from there, you know, interesting idea. I mean, you think about it. If you're a production company or a film company and this came across, you know, it's an interesting time. We've got Dragonheart, we've got Jurassic Park, all these sorts of massive films about giant beasts. King Kong was around. So, of course, part of that is to see whether they can feasibly do it on screen, you know. It was just after Dungeons and Dragons had been done, and, you know, the effects work on that was not exactly, you'd say, fantastic. It was good, but not to this sort of level. So they, of course, had to come up with a design for the dragon as well, and there's sort of this windswept wing look. It almost makes them look more bird-like, which I thought was really, really interesting too. So, of course, the effects, I think, were done incredibly well when it comes down to it too. So, how'd this movie go? Well, if you look at our amazing, reviewers like Rotten Tomatoes, who give this an approval rating of 42%. So it's basically, and it says an average rating of 5.2 out of 10. Which, to be honest, is probably thereabouts. And I think one of the interesting things is that when you get down to it, the story itself is rather small. You know, we literally, in a nutshell, that's, I think, where a lot of the reviews come down to, is that, you know, it's very crunched into one little place, particularly when they go to the castle. We do get to see some expanded areas and stuff like that too, but not as many action scenes as you would have guessed. And I think that's one of the interesting things that even friends of mine have said of that, when they think of the film, is that maybe it just doesn't have enough going on. There's obviously a lot of reviewers that like Matthew McConaughey's different performance in this, particularly playing that sort of tougher military role in this. And there's sort of a bit of myth around just what his team has done. But it's, you know, it's that mixture of high-tech wizardry of the military sort of action style. Mad Max, of course, where everything has gone wrong, you know, the world that could have, and then it obviously he had, fallen apart. And then, of course, you've got this sort of survivor feel to everything, which, some thought it was pretty damn good too. But then again, a lot of reviewers gave it one star as well, so sort of fell in between. Now, what's interesting is that this film was meant to have a sequel. And at this stage, they, you know, as the movie had come out, you know, they would have to see how things had gone. And Christian Bale was actually asked, you know, about whether there would be a film to follow this. And of course, they said possibly, but who knows? And again, the thing is, I think it would have been about passing on the torch. And of course, you've got the stepson in the movie that we see, and I think that would have been where it went to. You know, it would have been about that next reign, and of course, the reign of his, and how it led to, of course, looking after survivors in maybe a different place. Who knows where? Could be the castle, could be elsewhere altogether. And I think that's what makes it interesting, and it makes it you know, worth maybe looking at again. But I think this film really just needs to be experienced on a biggest screen possible. And that's because of the dragons, the vistas, and the big personalities, folks. Let's face it, they all are massive personalities. This film gets a 6 out of 10 in my waist, but no, we use, of course, the hand scale. So this gets a 3.5 out of 5 on, of course, the Hallenbach scale. And I hope you go and check out Rain of Fire when you can. It's great. Some of the best performances are when we get to see the fist fight, of course, between Christian Bale and, of course, the one, the only Vance Ann, played by, of course, Matthew McConaughey. And it looks as real as you think it would be. So with that, well, I'm going to sign off and wish you all well for the week. And I hope you have a great couple of days leading into the weekend. And we'll catch you next time here, of course, on the show with a look at, no doubt, another interesting action film. Keep smiling, and bye for now.